Hi, and welcome to the Making Our Way podcast. This week, you get just us again, because I didn't feel like squeezing in a guest edit before leaving for Maker Camp. Thanks for listening.
Hey, hey, guys.
Hey,
what's Christine? Up?
All right. So, Dean, what you been up to?
I am I'm trying to work on a new tool. You know, I always think it's funny. Our friend Keith at Blackthorn, he always shits on people with lasers that didn't take any skill. And I've sat here and I've run through about $100 of brass, mismarking this brass ruler I'm trying to come up with. But I got a new lens for my laser to where I can do a little bigger pieces. And it takes some time to set up and calibrate the lens, because the way these fiber lasers work, it's a galvo laser. What that means is, instead of a head moving with the laser beam shooting straight down, the laser beam shoots at a mirror and the mirror moves and directs where the laser is going to impact. And so the further you get away from dead center, it starts to kind of warp or whatever, you know, perspective. And so, but you can go into the settings and change those settings to tell it, hey, there's this much bulge or there's this much trapezoidal movement. And that way you can get it to where it's a consistent across the whole bed. And I am doing the best I can to dial this in. I want to make some brass rulers. I'm going to do a run of maybe 10, put them up for sale, see if anybody's interested in them, maybe do some jeweling on them. Austin sent me the link for the stuff he uses to do the jeweling. And I've got some pretty cool first runs. They're just not accurate enough. Like, I want to make sure that they, if you're going to use it as a ruler, it needs to be a ruler.
Right.
So I've got inches 2 through 11 pretty good, but that first inch and that last inch has given me some issues.
Well, I know once I bought the sticker tape that is the ruler. And so when I made my first workbench, I was going to be so smart and put a ruler all the way around so that if I've just got a random piece of wood that I'm working with or whatever, I can keep an eye on it based on that sticker tape measure. And then I realized it was not accurate at all. It was, I was just like, what a pile of crap. Now, I probably only paid like $6.99 on Amazon, but if it's going to look like a ruler, it should actually like be somewhat accurate. So word of the wise.
That's something I'd never considered is the ruler I'm using to measure this accurate. Right. You know, I just assumed it is. I need to check against maybe two or three rulers to make sure they're consistent. I'll tell you a quick story. I almost quit woodworking in about 2015, 2016. I was building a lumber cart. And so I was measuring inside and then going outside and make all the cuts. I just had job site saws. So all my saws were outside for the sawdust purposes. And I would make a cut and then come in and it wouldn't fit. It was too long or too short. It just, none of the pieces lined up. And so I finished this lumber cart and it looks like a pile of shit. It is just so bad looking. None of the seams match up. It's just really rough looking. And I'm distraught and I'm upset. And I'm like, is it me? Is it the tools? I don't know what it is. And then that's when I looked outside. I was using one of these tape measures I got free from some company. Inside, I was using a Husky tape measure, I think. And whenever I pulled them apart, the further you got from zero, the more off the measurements got. So when I'm making a 48-inch cut, it's almost a quarter, a half an inch difference on one tape measure to the other.
Wow.
Dang, yeah.
And so I was measuring inside thinking I needed a certain cut. And then when I was going outside, the tape measures weren't the same. And so I threw all those tape measures away and I bought all the same brand. So, and if I'm working on a project, I make sure I'm using the same tape measure inside and outside. Because the reality is, it doesn't matter if it's 12 inches. It just matters if you measured 12 inches and it measures 12 inches.
If that I can't makes sense. Even tell you how many times I've told them it doesn't matter if it's 12 inches.
Yeah. One of my favorite reels is whenever the guy holds up the tape measure and he asks people, like, show me what you think 6 inches is.
Right.
And then whenever they pull up just 4 inches, like, yes. And every now and then you get somebody pulls up 7.5. You're like, God damn, get some glasses, girl. But speaking of that, what you been up to, Austin?
Just doing my normal gig, making videos, starting to get some pin sales going. And I started some Hexactos a few weeks ago and then I decided to like abandon them and do other stuff. So my ADHD brain has got back to finishing some projects. Today, you know what? I'm sure you guys are just like me and do this, but like, you know what the tool post of a lathe looks like, right, Christy? It's like the square thing on top where your cutter goes. Uh-huh. So I was looking at mine today and I've never noticed this before, but on the right hand side, there's a threaded hole just in the, like, and I'm like, what the hell is that for? Like, I've never even seen it before.
It's for an arm to hold an indicator?
I guess, but I've never even seen it. And I was like, and so like, I was in the middle of a project and then I stopped to go, I'm like, I wonder what this thread is. And so I started trying to find a bolt that fits this, because it's got to be metric, right? And like, and then 30 minutes later, I was on Clubhouse talking, and I'm like, what the fuck is it? And everybody's like, what are you doing? I'm like, oh shit. For 30 minutes, I've been trying to figure out what this damn thread is, because you would think it's a 10 millimeter, but it's like it's a 9 and some weird thread pitch. And or it's some bizarro thread that I don't know what it is. And they're like, why are you even doing that? I'm like, because I got distracted by it. And now I'm 30 minutes in and I want to figure it out.
You know, I have found myself with in that same sense, not trying to figure out a threaded insert or whatever. But man, being here at the house all the time now, and I keep track of my time because I, in my mind, I want to see what time I'm putting into each client and how much I'm billing and blah, blah, blah. Even though I flat rate bill, I still want to see how I'm doing. But man, I'm like, why do I, it's the end of the day. How do I only have 3.45 billable hours in my day? I'm like, where the heck did the rest of the day go? But right. Yeah, it's just, easy to lose track.
It is. And like today for lunch, Joe stopped by and I'm like, there goes an hour and a half. Like, cause we're going to bullshit for an hour and a half, you know, like talking about whatever. I mean, we're, you know, a lot of it's work related, but.
Right.
Or spouse related. But that's where I get, like, if I have a day where a bunch of people stop by, everybody knows I'm home all the time. So they're like, hey, I'm swinging by. I'm like, okay. You know? And so they know that I'm here, and then, so they'll talk to me and then they'll walk over and go talk to my dad, you know? So it, you can lose some serious time in ways that you don't. A random bolt will cost you 30 minutes.
So Austin, how are you going about figuring out thread sizes? Just sticking random bolts in, or?
So I started with the bolts, but I don't have that many metric bolts. You know, I just don't carry them in stock very much. So, and it was a weird size. And so I was like, well, let me just go to my taps and then start working your way through the taps. But the problem with working your way through taps is if it's not a very clean deburred hole, it sometimes there's a little bit of guesswork, like this might be it, but let me get it started, you know, because a tap will re-tap if you're forceful, it'll be whatever the fucking size you want. So
I have one of those like strings that has the male and female, and then because I feel like there's another, like I get confused between, you know, standard stuff's fine, you know, quarter 20 and it's just the thread counts per inch or whatever. But then when you get into like the M8, M10, but then they have standard measurements for length. And then I don't know if those are metric or not. There's definitely some weird bolts out there or thread sizes out there.
Yeah. And that's what, so normally most of the times when you see things in your workshop that are metric, they're almost always the even. They're like 8, 10s, 12s. And that's why when this one pulled 9, I'm like, that is bizarre. What? And I only had 1 9. I had like a 9 1.0, and I needed the 1.5 or what, you know, because they have like 1.0, 1.25, 1.15, you know, whatever. All that.
Yeah. And then you'll get, are the threads, you know, cut, tapered, or are they just straight? It, you know,
right.
It can get interesting, especially older machinery. Is this on your Grizzly
My Grizzly. So it's going to be a standard metric. Yeah. It's not going to be like a Whitworth thread or something weird, you know, but still, it still didn't make sense to me. And so, but then once I realized I was like so deep in, I'm like, what am I doing? Like, I've already blew an hour and a half at lunch. Now I'm blowing a half an hour on this freaking bolt that doesn't matter. Cause I'm thinking about like, what could I mount there for a video? Like, that's what my brain's doing the whole time. My body's going through the motions of finding the bolt, but my brain's thinking about like, what can I use this threaded hole for? Which is a dumb way to think about videos, probably. But
well, now that we've bored everybody talking about threads, Christy, what have you been up to?
We had a successful wedding this past weekend. Marvin's youngest, Lane, got married, and everything went really well. We had a lot of people through the house here. And I think I mentioned on last week's podcast, talk about just prepping for it. You know, getting new back deck furniture and assembling all that, because it comes flat packed. We were quite surprised. And then, you know, hanging a television and all that kind of stuff on our back deck, because we use our back deck all the time.
How many shotguns was this wedding?
Okay. I probably should save that for Patreon. We'll talk about that later. We'll talk about that later.
And then I was dying laughing at last week's episode the whole time. You were talking about your big deck, and then, you know, it's covered. And I'm like, how did Austin and I keep it together through this whole deck conversation?
You guys are just envious of my deck. It's pretty big.
Yeah.
I'm just an admirer of a good deck.
Yeah.
I don't even know where to go with that one. Yes, but everything went wonderful. We were exhausted by the time, because the wedding was Sunday. Friday night was rehearsal, and we all went out to dinner after that. The local restaurant that actually hosted our wedding reception, was where it's a family member of Marvin's. So we went there Friday night. And then, of course, some of the girls got shit-faced, and one of them ended up had a trip to the emergency room to get hydrated.
Thankfully,
that was Friday night, and the wedding wasn't till Sunday. So Saturday, they had enough time to recover. You know, God love them to be young and and free again. But so Saturday, then we had a bunch of them. I mean, like 30-ish here for a big taco fiesta time, and had a real good time. And then Sunday was the wedding. And, you know, it was just nice to see a lot of Marvin's family, and some of my family came down and was at it too, but everything went really nice. And even, you know, we get a call, one of the groomsmen's, his pants was not with the group of clothes that was picked up. So off the girls went to go pick up pants from Men's Warehouse. You know, it's those kind of funny things now we laugh about.
The venue was really cool. You know, could you tell us a little bit about how it was designed and what it was made from?
The wedding chapel was at Mildred B. Cooper Memorial Chapel, which is in Bella Vista, Arkansas. I think there's also one in Eureka Springs, and there might actually be more. But Faye Jones, who studied under Frank Lloyd Wright, yes. But it was a steel structure, which was actually made out of railroad tracks from the mining cars. And so it was just really cool because it had that very tall, very steep cathedral look. And otherwise, everything was glass otherwise.
Yeah, it's wild looking.
Yeah, and there was a lot of trails, but a ton of trees. So even though it was all glass, the trees are still fully loaded with foliage. So it wasn't beaming in there. I was thinking, man, if it was like during the winter, of course, it wouldn't be that hot then, but I could feel some
bright.
Yeah, bright. And also you got a lot of greenhouse, you know, going on inside there with all that sun. But yeah, it was just absolutely beautiful. And we didn't even have any extra decorations, because that's what the lady that, you know, coordinates all of that, she's like, well, what other decorations do you have? And Grace was like, we don't have anything else. We just have this little sign to put out front and the little signature book, that kind of thing. And she's like, oh, you don't have anything? And Grace is like, no, why would you put up a bunch of stuff? Because, you know, you have all the glass windows and the beautiful trees, and it was just really, really pretty. So, but yeah, that was on Sunday when the ceremony and the whole wedding was, but it was a great success. We had a wonderful time.
Awesome. Yeah, it's cool. It was a cool place to look at.
Yeah. We'd like to take a minute and thank the folks over at Patreon for all their support over there. If you'd like to join them at patreon.com/makingourwaypodcast. Each week we have additional content that we post there, and we send out some stickers too. On our top tier, we've got Marion Ward from Creative Ward Gallery, Scott Horn from Dead It Yourself, and Ozark Spirit.
So I want to talk to you guys about when you're getting ready to tackle a new genre or like a new project of some kind of technique or material or something like that you've never used before. What is your go-to, like, how do you plan for it? Or what, you know, get What's your go-to way?
I stew and sweat and stress about it for about 6 months first.
And do you buy first and then do that? Or do you?
Yes.
Okay.
I have all the tools, all the equipment, all the material that I need. And then I will spend all the time stressing and fretting and stewing over pulling the cord and actually putting it into play.
Okay. When you're stressing and stewing, what are you? Are you watching YouTubes? Are you reading books about it? Are you actually thinking about it at all?
Yeah, no, that would make the most sense to actually watch YouTube videos. And Marvin's good about that. Usually, like, let's say the forge, you know, or when right. I did the welding and stuff like that, he's much better at, like, researching that kind of thing. I'll watch some YouTube videos, but I probably don't get enough background knowledge before I start something as I should.
Okay. So you stew and sweat for 6 months. Mm-hmm. When you go to get it rolling, uh-huh. Do you jump in fully or is it like, let me just try a test piece before I'm going to do something? Or
yeah, like when I started the welding part, right. I had a couple just pieces of scrap and I was just literally just running beads on this couple pieces of metal. Sure. But then I did not do much testing until I jumped in with the materials to build that little sofa table.
Right.
And I just jumped in and I learned a lot of things about that as far as welding and cutting material before you weld. And it was a lot of lessons learned and just the process of welding, you know, that. Tack, don't run a line.
Right.
You know, even though I knew that, I mean, I'd seen people do it that way. I'd heard people talk about it. I'd watched YouTube videos. I still thought, I could run a quick line here and then I'll be done. Well, no, sure. Now it's totally messed up.
Well, now you'll never forget it though. Because
absolutely.
You saw firsthand, like, I think when somebody tells you, they're like, here's the pitfalls, and it doesn't give you the understanding of the pitfall. You're like, I know there's a pitfall there. I have no idea why it's a pitfall, right?
Right.
But when you avoid looking at any possible piece of information that would help you out, like sounds like on purpose, you're going to fall into those pitfalls and you're going to learn it and you'll know it forever.
Yeah. Yeah. But then when I finished that little project, I was real happy with it. And so then I went into the bigger project with the base for the coffee table. So, right. I mean, I guess my theory is...
But didn't you have... In between there, you went to the welding class.
Oh, yes.
Right.
Correct. That is correct. And the very first times, the first couple times that I welded, it was a maker's camp. That was the only experience I had. And then you're right. I did the one little bitty project, the little sofa table thing, the little sofa thing. And then we did go to that welding class and then I did the big project. So yeah, I guess I did. I did have a little more education by the time I got to the last project.
So here's the question. Next time that you're going to take on something new, do you think you're going to do the same thing? Or do you think mm-hmm. you would try to go to that class first before starting it?
If the class is an option with the time available. Now, I mean, I think of like Maker's Camp, there's definitely things that I have never done before that I'm curious about, whether it's the stone carving or the jewelry making and stuff like that I've never done. So I'm kind of curious to see if that might be something that I'd like to do as well. Unfortunately, I know myself, and I will probably also buy the stuff, let it set for 6 months, just look at the bare minimums and then jump in when I'm running behind and it's something I need to have done at the last minute. Because that's just how I roll. I don't encourage that behavior, but that's just how I do things.
All right, Dean. So same scenario. What's the prep work before starting the project?
So I could never do the class first.
Right.
Because I could never go into a class and not know where my weaknesses are. I would be so conscious about looking like an idiot. So I'm always going to just, this is my process. I always just jump in foot first and try and see how bad it is. And then from there, I figure out where my vulnerabilities are. The problem is, if my first try is not that bad, then I'll just keep pumping stuff out and not get any better. So two examples, bought this new 3D printer. It's so easy to download files and just send them to print. I never sat down and figured out the difference for the speeds and feeds and infills and percentages and when to do different supports, because I don't have to, it's working. So I'll never be an expert at it because I'm just feeding. When I did Ben's little labels, brass plaque things, the first one I hit it, looked like shit. So then I said, okay, you can't ruin material 3 square inches at a time. You have to take a step back and figure out what the settings are. And so then I came up, okay, I'm going to do these 1-inch squares. I'm going to cut these out. Do they measure an inch? Are all my settings correct? And I dialed it in that way. And then I went back to the original plan, more educated with new settings and things, and had a much better result. And that's kind of what's going on with the laser here. I didn't look or read a single thing. I have settings. I know how to calibrate it. Gave it a shot, came out like shit. So then I'm reading, okay, what does this mean? What does that mean? How do I set up this lens? And I'll keep trying at it. I've always been very hands-on. You know, like when I was in school, you're in high school band or whatever, junior high band, and you have a new music piece. I can't read the music that well, but I could hear you play it and then go, okay, if I play it once, now I understand what needs to happen. And that's kind of how I am with making too. If I'm going to do anything, I'm just going to jump in and see what happens. If it's good enough, it's good enough. But I've always been real good about, I don't judge myself by my first try. Right. So if the first try sucks, I'm okay with that, because I look at it as, okay, here's how I discovered what my vulnerabilities are. How do I improve these weaknesses and get better?
Yeah. So do you ever see yourself willing to take a class?
I'll take a class after I do it. Okay. So like I've turned on the lathe, right? I've turned a lot of stuff. I've turned pins, I've turned bowls, I've turned vases. I've turned all kinds of stuff. I would go take a turning class because I'm not so worried about necessarily how to hold the tool. So now instead of just general, how do I hold it? I'll learn on, okay, how to refine holding it.
Right. You're holding it this way because of this. Right.
So instead of just being overwhelmed by starting from scratch, you know, I already know how to drive a car, so I would take a performance driving course, you know.
Right.
I don't need to start from the beginning. Even if the class does start at the beginning, that would be fine because I'm picking up refinement points. Sure. I love taking little courses like that.
Yeah, I think do you think that the not wanting to take a class at the very beginning is because you don't want to look bad at
it? Yeah, I can't look like I'm at the bottom of the class no matter what.
Yeah, same.
I was the guy who did his homework because I couldn't be at the bottom of the class.
Right. So the only class that I've ever really taken, it was a blacksmithing class, and it's what started me blacksmithing. And the reason I took a class was because I didn't have all the gear. I didn't want to buy all the gear in case I wasn't into it, you know?
Right.
And then it was like, I got home that night and I was on my Facebook Marketplace. Like, this is happening, you know, like immediately. But before I went, I was watching every YouTube beginner blacksmith, but you know, to see like how they're holding the tongs, what motions they're doing, how they're holding the hammer, you know, so that I had a groundwork before I went there.
See, and that's exactly why I don't understand. And maybe I'm just in the wrong part of the country where these things aren't offered. But like you said, you took a blacksmithing class, you went home and you were on Facebook Marketplace to buy things. I went to my first power carving class. We were using ArborTech tools. I came home, I ordered ArborTech tools. Though that's the prime opportunity for those tool companies to, you got a captive audience that just learned on your tool. I don't understand why there's not more tool companies offering classes. And maybe, I don't know. Don't you think?
Yeah, it's just out of their wheelhouse. So like, that's why they're I swear all these tool companies are in the 1980s where they're so focused on trade shows. They're like trade show. And that is so, you see it a lot with machining companies. Cause like all these companies that I've been talking to about sponsorship, they're like, well, we do the trade show. And I'm like, your trade show is fucking worthless. If you want to influencers are getting to 10 times what those people are getting to. And you know who right. else I'm getting to? I'm getting to people who are wanting to learn about machining or wanting to get into machining. And I don't want to say the company's name, but I was talking to them today and they're like, so like, you want us to send you one to try out and then you send it back to us? And I was like, how is that going to do any? Like, this should be a continuous journey together for right. this really expensive thing I want from you. like a part yeah. for a lathe that almost costs as much as my whole lathe. But, you know, I'm like, how short-sighted they are where,
yeah, yeah,
you know, it's so funny to me. But that's they're not thinking of home users. They, right. they have no idea the size of the, I think Brian House calls it the, he calls it like the second industrial revolution, oh, where right, people right. are yeah. getting heavy-duty machinery in their garages.
Like, yes.
And you see, there's so many guys that have full on machine, like unbelievable machine shops in a two car yeah. garage at their house. And they're making
yeah.
unbelievable stuff. So it's, and these companies like don't Clueless. Even know those guys exist.
Yeah. Yeah. It's crazy.
Sorry, I went on a rant.
No, but you're right.
Let's reel it back.
No, I mean, you're right.
So yeah, I watch YouTube and try to pick up stuff like that.
Right. Sorry,
but are you okay? I'm gonna when you watch YouTube to try to learn something, are you more likely to buy the same tool that the person that you are learning from is doing?
Yeah, that's Absolutely. fair. Honestly, I think that's one of the issues I've had with the sewing machines is Clayton has a Texo, a Juki, and his favorite machine's an Adler, so it's three different brands. And then I watch videos and there's guys on Cobras, there's got you know, so there's all these different, so I can't figure out, okay, what's the brand? And that is one thing I do struggle with, Austin. Even though I am someone, I buy all the tools, like that's a thing. I worry about making the wrong decision. Like I don't want to invest in an ecosystem or a brand and yeah. then I'm left stranded with, because I had some, and nothing against the tools, I've bought some CNC machines, some lasers that maybe they don't have the best customer support, or maybe they've moved on to their newest product. And so I feel like I just got left with this $4,000 tool that I don't have the support I need to get set up, and it's just sitting there. And so I don't want to do that again. I don't want to buy a $2,500 sewing machine and then I can't load a bobbin and there's no support. Yeah. And I'm not saying that any of those companies would be like that, but that's something I have anxiety about. Like, do I have to buy a Juki because that's what he can show me on, or can I buy a Sailrite because that's what Adam Savage uses, or do I get a Cobra because that's what, you know, this other leather company uses? Or so, that is something, if I saw people using the same brands in videos, I would probably just get those brands.
Yeah. So influencer marketing does work.
Oh, hands down.
Yeah.
Hands down.
I think, and this is probably, you know, this is kind of like old advice, but I would search for like you want to sew leather, go to leatherworker.net. And go in the sewing machines and see what the majority of people are using. Because I think most of those guys use Cobras, like the professional saddle guys.
Yeah.
They're using, but of course, you're not trying to make saddles.
I'm not, so
you
might need saddles, something. Yeah.
Right.
With those dogs, right. You might want to invest in saddle making.
Well, they couldn't support me.
Our middle tier for Patreon is Tony Langer from Langerworks, Susan DePlantis from Hearth and Garden Art, Stephanie Taddeo, and Kyle with Footwork Woodworking.
And this week for Q3, we are going to throw it back to a Patreon recording from 2 weeks ago. It's where I describe the process of building my tool roll tool bag that I am bringing to Maker Camp and is going to be part of the Maker Swap. It's more than just the tool roll. I give just kind of some insight into how I think of things and how I design projects. It fits well with what our Q2 discussion was. These are the kind of insights you get if you're a member of Patreon. So if you want to join, even the lowest tiered members get access to our special episode or release. Those come out every week, just like the regular podcast. They tend to be a little less regulated, a little less PG, kind of go off on the rails. I think this week we talk about, you know what? If you want to know, you have to join Patreon. But this is from 2 weeks ago. It is our Patreon episode on my Maker Camp swap item. Hope you enjoy. This week's Patreon is going to be just me again. We had some technical difficulties, so you get a treat, another Just Dean episode. And what we're going to focus on, we're going to do a deep dive. You know, that was the beginning of this podcast, deep dives into my maker swap item, which is my tool roll tool bag. If you haven't seen it, I posted it in stories. I might have a reel about it, but I'm going to do some glamour shots here this weekend. It should be posted by the time you hear this episode. Basically, what this is I had an idea for a long time about a tool bag that had a tool roll attached to it. My wife, you know, so graciously pointed out that you could just stick a tool roll in a bag, and she's not wrong. But the whole thing was organization at the site. So if I have a friend who says, hey, can you come help with a project? And I go over there, sometimes I have more than one bag because, you know, I have these tools in this one and these tools in this one, or I have one large bag, but I never feel organized. Like, I never feel like I know where stuff is. Stuff has a place. I'm digging around the bag. Tools are bouncing off each other. If one of them gets dirty, then they're all getting dirty. And I just didn't like the approach of having, you know, Mary Poppins' magic sack with everything in it. And so I had thought about this bag that had additional pockets on the outside. Now, I have some tool bags that have just pockets around the outside that you can slip things in. Those are very useful. I like the ones with those on the outside and the inside, kind of like a garden bag maybe. I like those a lot, but I wanted a tool roll on it because I like tool rolls. I think they're neat that you can fit a whole wrench set or screwdrivers or whatever and roll it up, and it takes up as little space as possible. I just like that idea. And I apologize for the background noise. I've got a few tools running, and it's hot back here, so I have a fan on. But I'm sure you can deal with it. And obviously, I have a TV on in the background if you hear random cheering, watching football. But back to the bag. So whenever the idea of the Maker Camp swap started, I had originally thought of doing just some stamps. And then the more I thought about it, I was like, you know, this is an opportunity to push me to finally try to make that tool roll bag. And so I decided to go for it. I just took some scrap material first and just try to sew it up to see if I could make what I wanted to do work. And it did work. The original bag design, I started, you can imagine, like, you're looking at the bag from the end, and there's a zipper down the middle and a left side and a right side. The original bag, the left side wrapped down the bottom and extended out, and that was the tool roll. It was attached to the left side, and I thought that would help with ultimate support. Then the right side would attach to the zipper and then stitch into the tool roll at the bottom. And I thought it was an okay design, but I did struggle. Part of bag making is you do a lot of sewing inside out, and you have to flip. And I was like, oh, I don't know if I like the way this is working out. But also originally, the straps, I had envisioned a strap on the left side of the bag and then a strap on the tool roll. So the strap would kind of go under the tool roll, and then you would pick it up together like that. So that was my original plan. I ended up pivoting from that. I still think that's a good idea because one weakness in my final design is when you hold it from the straps, it does lean the tool rolls way. And a lot of that is just because where I have the straps pass through or hinged, it's at the very top of the bag. And so the tool roll is pulling it down. If I had them strapped, hinged a little lower, I think it would hang a little straighter. But also if I may go back to that design and see if I can get that to work where the strap comes around the side. But anyway, moving on. There was a reason it changed, and I'll talk more about that. After I did the initial bag, I did a second version, and in the second version, I basically just sewed a bag, and then I cut a slit in the bottom, slid the tool roll through this slit, and then stitched it from both sides. So it was almost like the bottom of the bag on the inside and the outside was the tool roll. I thought this would be the most secure. The problem was, because the tool roll existed inside and outside, when I went to flip the bag inside out, I had a lot of problems with that. And so I was like, okay, this isn't working. And so my next thought was to do a bag and a tool roll separate and then combine them with rivets after. So that was going to be the plan. But as I was finishing it, I was like, wait a minute, if I just stitch the tool roll on last as another bottom of the bag, it'll make the bottom a little more robust, and it should all work out. And it did work out. And the third version of the bag was pretty good. I was actually pretty happy with version 2. I'll probably keep that one for myself, and version 3 I'll take apart, but I was pretty happy with version 3. Some other things that had changed, you know, V1, I had no straps. V2, I used what was laying around. I actually took a ratchet strap from my truck, cut the hooks off, and that's what I used for the straps for the handles and everything. V3, I had ordered webbing from Amazon, 1.5 inch webbing. This stuff is, it's beautiful. It feels robust. I'm really, really happy with it. And that's what I used for V3. And then when I made my final bag, I actually ordered a 1 inch version of the same color. because I felt like the verticals where the straps connected were just a little robust. And another change. So, here's a lesson I want to share with everybody. There's this weird thing about, I have a good idea, I need to keep it to myself. And I don't like that at all. I really believe if you have an idea, you need to talk to your community about it. Talk to your friends, talk to your family, show your contemporaries, show like-minded people, show people outside of the box, because they're going to give you good ideas. And so I brought, and they're not going to steal your idea. I mean, I get it. That's the sexy story, is the genius that had a great invention and then someone stole it. But that's an exception and not the norm. That just doesn't happen. And so I brought my bag to work because nobody at work is going to, you know, quit their day job and go steal my bag idea. I brought V3 to work to show some people, and they had a lot of good feedback. One of which was my original bag had a hook in the middle, like the buckle was in the middle, and it was a plastic buckle. And one of the guys pointed out, well, hey, if you had this full of tools and you throw it down with that plastic buckle, could that buckle break under all those tools? I was like, oh, that's a good point. I need to find some metal buckles. And I think one of the best upgrades from V3 to Final were these metal buckles. I've got that. I think they're called Cobra buckles. It's like a tactical. I bought 1.5 inch and 1 inch. Again, I went with the 1 inch. They're plenty big enough. I really, really like the way they look. And so I've got these Cobra buckles on here. But I wouldn't have done that without feedback from my community, you know. Another bit of feedback that was kind of interesting was the original bag just had straps on it, you know, handles. And one of the girls at work was like, oh, you know, it'd be really cool is if the straps were long enough that you could pull it. My original first idea was more like a tote, a maker tote, I was going to call it. And the tote had a tool roll that flipped down from the top. And then the straps could go from tote bag to backpack. That was my original idea. I just didn't follow through with it. I may revisit that and kind of have more than one bag design. But she had said she was really excited about seeing that. Was there any way we could do a transitioning strap on this bag? And so we got talking, and what we ended up doing was I've only attached the strap, you know, anchored the strap on one end on each side. And then the other end is a loop that the strap can slide through. And so when you slide the straps through on the end of the bag, you've got one big loop that you can throw over your shoulder. So if your hands are full, you can throw this over your shoulder. Not a backpack, but, you know, definitely like a duffel over your shoulder. It hangs vertically, but makes it very convenient. It's a neat little transition. And I only got that because of the community. A third thing was I didn't want any pockets, because in my head, when I was thinking pockets, I was thinking a gusseted pocket. And I was like, I don't want to make it bulky. I don't want to make it bulky. I already have a tool roll. I don't want to add any bulk on the outside. And this the gentleman that let me use his industrial sewing machines showed me a technique of just a regular, like a slip-in pocket with a zipper, but it's not bulky. It doesn't take up a lot of space. And we were able to make it out of leather, which the leather accents were a huge win. So I learned from sharing my project. I adapted. I went to two buckles instead of one. I went to a metal buckle instead of a plastic buckle. And I came up with this transitioning strap idea and added a pocket. All those were because I shared it with friends. I'll tell you another big one was I don't have experience with this product. And I don't have enough time to beta test. So my original bags, I was just stitching the bag together. I didn't think about wear and tear or how it would function. And so when I showed an actual bag maker, he pointed out that any of the seams on the tool roll that would come in contact with sharp tools, I needed to support. I need to reinforce with leather. So all the seams on the tool roll have a leather strip between the canvas, and that's so that if you slide a chisel or a screwdriver or anything sharp, it's not going to cut through the stitching. It's going to hit that leather, and that'll stop it from cutting through. I would have never known that until whoever won the bag complained, because I just hadn't done enough of these. And so sharing it with someone who knew what they were doing, who, you know, has the ability and the tools and the equipment to take this idea, but that's not who you should be surrounding yourself with. And I'm appreciative that, you know, he was willing to share that fact with me. So moving on to the final bag, I have a Singer Industrial. It's like a 4422 or something like that. Something. It's four digits and there's some fours in it. But it's a nice machine. It can do 8 ounce canvas. Okay. Too wide. It gets a little funny when you add the webbing for the straps. So I went to Twisted Arrow and used their leather goods store here in Houston. And they have a bunch of industrial sewing machines. So the majority of this project I did there, I sewed on, he has a flatbed Juki with a presser foot. And then he's got a post arm machine that we're able to do some of the other stuff, some of the inside stuff. But what he also had was 20 or 18 ounce canvas. I think it was 18 somewhere. Yeah, I think it's 18 ounce canvas, which was more than twice as dense as what I had had. So the bag is now made out of very dense canvas, and he has leather there, tons of leather scraps I could use. So two features of the bag. The original idea was I wanted to use as much stuff from the community as I could. So I reached out to a few people, and Ethan Carter in a giveaway that was put on by Emmett from Dead Rise. I had won an Ethan Carter X-Acto. I already have one, and not that I wouldn't have taken another one, but he knew I had one. And so he reached out and was like, is there anything else you'd want? And I said, actually, I'm making this bag, and if you would make some straps for it, that'd be amazing. So Ethan did a corset stitch on just two pieces of leather. I kind of gave him the dimensions I was looking for, mailed that over to me, and the leather really popped on the bag. And so I was like, okay, we need to find some other opportunities to add leather into this project. Those came in the form of the tabs on the end. So like some pull tabs to hold while you unzip the bag, put tabs on each end, one with my logo, one with the Maker Camp logo. I think they're big additions to the bag. The other thing I got from the community was Griffin Makes does these really cool bag tags or whatever you want to use them for, but they're the red tags that you are the tags you would see on airplane rockets to remove before flight. And so he makes them, they say remove before making. And I bought one of those and I put that on the zipper. I always thought they were really cool and I'd like to share that with these people. In addition, for the leather, we did the pocket on the inside that kind of matches the handles. And then a really nice, you needed a thinner leather that would fold and be more malleable. And so we used that for the actual tool roll. So the inside of the roll, instead of being a contrasting canvas, it's this light brown leather that it's thinner, so it handles the rolling action really well. And hopefully whomever gets this takes care of it, or there's so much wax on the bag, it'll kind of take care of itself. And I'll tell you about the waxing at the end. I'm just going to go through sewing. So we did the same thing there at Twisted Arrow. We did a prototype because I wanted to make sure the sizing was right. And we actually ended up on 27 by 27 for the original cut. And then we figured out what our corners were going to be, what the tool roll was going to be. And the reason we picked those is because you have to be careful when doing a box-in bag that the corners come together well. If there's too much of a difference in the length, like say you were trying to make a bag that was very tall but not very deep, well, then the corners that you're boxing have very different dimensions, and you end up with a lot of waste material. And I just was leaving that raw edge inside, and it kind of looked ratty, but they have experience making bags there. So, you know, he encouraged me to do, what is this stuff called? Something tape. I can't think of it right now, but I'll think of it in a second. But it's basically just like it hides a seam. And we did that on the inside to hide all the seams. The other thing was he had boxes of old canvas that they weren't using for anything. And there was like this Hunter's Orange, and I grabbed it because I like the idea of the contrast. Like, it's very bright on the inside. You can see everything that's on the inside. And so we've got this bright orange inside. We did the pocket, and I also did some elastic strap that you can like put pencils or pens in. I believe Dead Rise is going to give me a pencil that I'll stick in there. So that, you know, you've got a few little extra things. But the bag came out really good. Used their machines, worked on it kind of slow watching football. Took probably about 6 or 7 hours to make the final thing. But there was a lot of game planning in there. I think moving forward, they'll probably take about 2.5 hours each to make. I think I'm going to make 10 more. And we'll see. There will either be Christmas presents for friends, or I'll put them up for sale. So I don't know if anybody wants them, but there may be an opportunity to get one here in the future. The last step was waxing the bag. If you've never waxed any canvas, it's not intimidating at all. It's actually really easy. You just, what I actually use, my wife hates kitchen appliances. And a few years ago, we got a Darth Vader, what are those things called? It's not a crock pot, it's a Instapot. A Darth Vader Instapot, and I just couldn't get rid of it. I mean, it's a Darth Vader Instapot. So what I did instead is it's in my shop, and I use that to melt wax. I put it on the steam function, fill it with water, and then I take an old dog bowl that fits on the inside. I went to the grocery store, found a dog bowl that fit on the inside, and that's how I melt my wax. I use it like a double boiler, melted a bunch of wax I had. I do 50-50 bees and paraffin, mainly just because beeswax is expensive. Probably be better if you did all beeswax, but melted that up. And I just take a brush it on, and then you take a heat gun. I just have a Harbor Freight heat gun. And after you brush the wax on and it kind of starts to dry, you come back with a heat gun. And when you heat it up, it sucks into the fabric. It's a pretty cool effect. You do have to be careful around any synthetics like these straps I have and stuff. But for the most part, it worked out really well, and I'm super happy with it. The takeaways I just want you to have, I know this is about 15 minutes or a Patreon, it's a little long. The takeaways I want you to have are, if you're interested in doing something, don't judge yourself on your first attempt. You know, this was four versions in, and I'm telling you, there's still some things. The next one, I'm going to put a pocket on the outside. I think I'm going to wrap the tool portion all the way around and do a Velcro pocket for sockets or smaller items on the outside. So there's some things I'm going to make, some changes I'll do on the next few bags. And that's only because the more you do, the more you see. The better your order of operation gets, the better you understand your materials, your supplies, how things need to be cut, shaped. So if you can afford it, time and money, do a few versions. Don't judge yourself on your first attempt. The second thing is, don't hide it from everyone. You're not going to come out with some great secret and then think it's not going to get ripped off anyway. Talk to your community, talk to your friends, talk to the people that you trust their opinions, get feedback, and you'd never know who'll have a brilliant idea that really takes your item up to the next level. I think going from one strap to two, I never would have considered it, brought this up to the next level. I think adding the pocket brought this up to the next level, and really the strap. I love this transitioning strap idea, really brought it up to the next level. So I appreciate my friends helping me out and thinking of that kind of stuff. So don't hide things. Talk to your community, get encouragement, do more than one. Don't judge yourself on your first attempt. You're always learning. And, hey, put yourself out there. We don't all have to be consumers. You know, if you truly want to be creative, it doesn't have to be a bag. Maybe it's a recipe. You know, maybe it's something else. Do some instructables. That's really freeing. You know, do an instructable. See if you can really get yourself out there. Try something new. If anything, use that maybe for inspiration for a project you want to do. But I hope everybody... has a good time. If you're at Maker Camp, please come say hi. Introduce yourself to me. I'm really bad with names. It's not personal. I'm one of those people who am bad with names. But please come talk to me. Come talk to Austin and Christy. Again, I'm working on these challenge coins. If you're a patron and you're at Maker Camp, I'd love to give you a challenge coin. If I can, I may try to mail them out to the higher tiered patrons. I got to get Christy's okay on that first. But I hope you enjoyed this, impromptu Dean only Patreon episode. We'll have the full gang back. We record again this week, and we'll make sure to let Austin and Christy talk a little more.
Thanks for joining us today. If you like this episode, please give us a review and subscribe. We'd love to hear from you, so reach out to us on Instagram at Making Our Way Podcast or on Patreon. You can find all of our latest individual content on Instagram or YouTube. I'm at High Caliber Craftsman. Dean is at Dean_Duplantis, and Christy is at Twisted Twine Woodworking. Lick it, stick it, see you later, bye.
And a thank you to the first tier. We've got Jacob with Griffin Makes, Jacob with Other Dog Design, Keith Drennan from Blackthorn Concept, Brendan McDonough from McDonough Design, Greg from Platte Valley Woodworks, Eric from Overall Makerworks, Jeff Stein, a weird guy, Dave Bauer, Caitlin Landerno, Morley Kurt, Greg from Platte Valley Woodworks, The Grant Alexander, Jen Griffin, the Black Sheep, Brian from Moonshine Leatherworks, The Makeshift Podcast, Maritime Knife Supply, Henry at HT1 Metalworks, Brad Harrison from Brad's Customs, Steve Delaney from One Old School Pirate, Kelsey Watson, Dan from Goofballs by Dan, Chris Powell from Full Steam Designs, Spaghetti and Waffles, Rebecca Johansson, Ira Housewort, Justin from Bear Maked, Ed Johns from BudJoints.com, David Beck with Makes, and Robert DeMarco.